Radio. This is Pet Life Radio. Let's talk pets.
Good morning, and happy Memorial Day weekend to all. Hope you are planning some good, fun stuff. You know, I personally don't like the days of the week that we're closed on a weekday because inevitably you think, okay, it's a day off for me. Yeah, it kind of is. So what's going to happen is on Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, I'm going to be like double, triple booked because people still need to be seen. So what happens is, okay, he's closed Monday, I'll go in Tuesday. Well, my regular Tuesday people are coming in anyway. It's always a zoo. So I'm so used to it by now anyway, but it is what it is. So I'm waving as I want to wait till we get a few more people here because I'm very curious. You know, I left you last week with the big question of do you let your dogs sleep in bed with you? Yes or no? And we'll discuss what the experts say, the behaviorists, which by the way, I don't listen to. Because I always listen, you know, there's some experts that really know their stuff, know what they do. There are others that I think the school of hard knocks is, I think, better sometimes than the academia school. You're sitting and learning the basics. It's kind of like a difference between the University of California and some of the other schools in general. You know, the UCs are known for their theory, their research. Whereas a perfect example, psychology. If you get a PhD in psychology from UCLA, you're obviously very well trained. You're more like textbook theory, the science behind it. You get a PsyD from one of those local schools, and all your knowledge is coming from clinical practice. So they say you're probably going to be a better practitioner than a researcher if you get one of those kinds of degrees. And that's what I feel sometimes when it comes to the medicine. When you're out there, you're seeing the real thing. You're practicing for, in my case, over 40 years. That says something. So first of all, Helen says, yes, Daisy and Rubus sleep on the bed with me. So we have five. And I have some pictures. You've seen them probably. I've posted them before. And yes, all five on the bed. First of all, in all fairness, talk about the other side of the coin, which is what the experts say. I think that you want to keep things. Hey, Stephanie has two cats. Do they sleep in bed with you, Stephanie, or not? What I find is this, that when you have an animal that is having a behavioral problem, possibly with aggression, possibly with you make them too comfortable, okay, then they think by being in bed with you while you're sleeping and they're sleeping, that puts them on an equal level. And then they're going to challenge you more. So the experts say it's not a good idea. Now, my side note to that would be it's not a good idea if your dog is, hi, Steph, we're talking about whether dogs sleep in bed, or in this case, with you, cats. Do we let our pets sleep in bed with us? And I'm just curious to know what, I mean, I have five dogs, as you know, and yes, they all sleep in bed. Last night, I was chilling around, three of my five cats came in bed and joined us. So I think that there is a pro and con. So if I think your pet is having a behavioral issue with you, then almost definitely, I love that. So then I think that they have a point, that we have to set the boundaries. We have to let them know that we are still the boss. So if by doing that, by allowing them to be in bed with you, they challenge you more on other matters. For example, they think you're equal. They're eating and you walk near them or you want to, you know, take a bone away from them while they're chewing and they start growling at you. They don't look at you as the master. And that could be that all is related to how we treat them. But as long as you know that those boundaries are set and they are there not to be challenged, I mean, it doesn't bother me at all when they sleep in bed. Now, let me see. If I'm sleeping in bed, is that they jump off before I can help them? Their back legs are used. Okay, so that's an issue there. So the issue is a medical issue. Now, if you have a high bed and you're worried about your pets jumping on, jumping off, or you have a bed behaviorally that now is looking at your bed as a place they can, well, relieve themselves, then no, then obviously it's unacceptable. They have to remember their place in the household. As they get much older, now my Labrador has a tougher time coming to the bed. We have a footstool today. He's 13 years old. So then what will happen is we then will sometimes help him up. Getting down is no problem. So we put a footstool at the end of the bed. He can jump from the floor to the, you know, the little, it's like a little chair at the end of the bed. And then from there, he can jump on the bed and he's fine. And, oh, yeah. So those of us, again, so there's another issue, jumping off of the bed on hard floors. So there are two issues here we're dealing with. One are the practical issues. The practical issues of, is the bed too high? Are the floors too slippery? Is the dog or it too old? That's more the practical issue. I really want to know behaviorally, do you find that your dogs challenge you more or showing evidence of misbehavior or not really having that clear boundary of master and pet because you let them sleep on bed with you? That's the issue taken up by the behaviorists, is that it's where do we draw the line between, you know, master and the submissive when we are allowing them something as equal with us as letting them sleep in bed with us. As they said, my dogs have never really challenged that. And I'm just curious to know, Lynette, how are you? So that's how I feel about it. And again, I think it's very personal, but I would tell you most of my clients, and we talk about this, will let their pet sleep in bed. Now, here's a good one. Daisy's almost 15 and I got a ramp for her carpeted and she used it with no problem. So most of us, Deb is chiming in. It's never been an issue. And it's never been an issue with me also. But I do, in all fairness to the behaviorists, I do hear sometimes issues where, how about this one? A dog is biting and it has bitten its masters before. And this particular dog has a tighter bond with the wife. The husband gets into bed and moves a little too close to the wife and the dog will snarl and sometimes snap. That 100%. No. This dog is no longer allowed on the bed because you can't change your lifestyle. Now, sometimes what my dogs do, and there's a great cartoon about this. So the dogs are huddled around one of the spouses that they are bonded with. Okay, you see it's the wife, might go to bed sooner, earlier than the husband. Now, the husband's coming into the room, getting ready to jump into bed. And in the cartoon, she says, the dog getting up, guys, spread out. So now the dogs are all over the bed, including where the husband's side of the bed. So now the husband gets up to get into bed and looks down and all the dogs are sprawled over his area. He scratches his head. It's like, now where am I going to go? So, you know, again, one of my dogs will literally, it will sleep literally exactly where I am. But all I have to do is I don't even have to lift him up. I just kind of slide him over. I crawl into bed and he sprawls back and cuddles with me. That is the best. That is where you know your dogs still know their place. They know that they are submissive. They should be submissive and they don't try to get in your way. A newly adopted cat sleeps with me. My Malinois sleeps on his own bed. I wish he didn't wake up at 5:30 a.m. Well, of course, that's about my dogs get me up at 5 to 5:30 every morning. So, but you know, that's part of the deal. All right, a couple of things I want to talk to you about. Also, added vaccines for summer vacation. Because two things that happened during the summer. One, we travel. And number two, it's not just vaccines, it's other things too. Two, we travel, all right? And also, because of the longer days, we tend, and the warmer weather, we are doing more for ourselves too. We're out there more exercising. So one of the things that I wanted to, you know, make sure you're very clear about, because of, like, for example, let's talk about flea control. A lot of people take off the winter by giving the monthly flea products, which is okay. We don't see a ton of fleas here during the winter. However, come March, April, certainly now May, we're starting to see fleas. So you want to make sure that you start up your flea medication. I had a client come in this past week and she wanted the Lyme disease vaccine. And my first question was, oh, are you traveling for the summer? She goes, yeah, we go back to Connecticut every summer. Ah, yes, you need that vaccine. We don't have Lyme disease really here in West LA, but many parts of the country do. So you need to find out. Another one, heartworm. We are seeing more and more mosquitoes here in LA, but still not to the degree where we're having heartworm disease that is becoming an epidemic. It's endemic in, for example, the Northeast during the spring and summer, South all year round, the Gulf Coast all year round. I mean, when they had Katrina and we got all these dogs, shelter dogs being sent to LA from New Orleans. And I got to tell you, everyone was heartworm positive. Everyone. So whereas I had a case many years ago, it was the first case in Los Angeles County of a heartworm positive dog. It was a golden retriever that never left LA. It was born in LA and never left and had heartworm. Now there was interesting. They lived in Burbank, right next to Forest Lawn Cemetery. As soon as the Southern California Heart and Preventive Society went to visit the dog where they lived to see what's going on, they knew right away. And they went to the cemetery and lifted up some headstones. And what did they find under these headstones? Thousands of mosquito larvae. Why? Because what do mosquitoes thrive on? Moisture, humidity. Well, up on the lush green hills of the Forest Lawn Cemetery, they're watering these lawns all the time. So you have the moistures there. It is hot at the base, especially spring and summer. And this was a perfect environment for mosquitoes. Not only that, but now we have mosquitoes here in LA that have been able to multiply and survive in drier climate. So the prediction was made then 20 years ago that we will ultimately, it could be 20, it could be 25, it could be 30 years from now, we are going to have a heartworm problem just like back east and in the south. So my recommendation is that if you are sitting outside on a weekday, a weekend afternoon, like for example, this weekend, you have an extra day off, the sun's going down, it's still warm, and you're sitting there reading a book, whatever you're doing, taking a little nap. And if you're swatting mosquitoes, you better put your dogs on a heartworm preventative. And if they're adult dogs greater than 5 or 6 months of age, you should test them first. So you want to test them, make sure they're negative. They probably will be. I have not seen another heartworm positive in an LA dog since that first one. So I know it's not a big problem, but you want to then once it comes back negative, go ahead and start your preventive. Now there are the monthly, in fact, your flea and tick products that you may be using, one of your isoxazolines, which is Credelio, Bravecto, Simparica, and NexGard. They now have NexGard Plus, Credelio Plus, and Simparica Trio, which gets fleas, ticks, and heartworm prevention. So I would talk to your veterinarian, and you want to do that as well. That would be my recommendation, but you should test them first and stay on it. Many of these companies, and you need to check, you should check with them. If you have your dog on heartworm prevention religiously, monthly, and they end up still getting heartworm, you put a claim into that company whose product you're using, and they will help, if not completely cover, the cost of treatment. So they guarantee their products. So you want to check with them first to make sure, but that's what I tell my clients. That could be great. Heartworm injections, they are cheaper. That's true. There's ProHeart 12. I don't know if there's still 12 on the market, but 6 is definitely on the market. And the reason we don't use them here is simply because you got to give your dogs the other stuff anyway. And if you look at the cost differential between the NexGard and NexGard Plus, you're getting for like $3 or $4, you're getting the extra prevention for the heartworm. It's not that expensive. But if you are in an area where heartworm is a problem, mosquitoes are a problem, yes, talk to your veterinarian about the ProHeart injections. As I said, there was a 12. It was taken off the market. I don't know because I don't use it, so I'm not familiar with it. I don't know if it's been brought on back on the market, but there was that option. Thanks for telling me that. Okay. So anyway, if your summer plans change, rattlesnake is another one. If now you're starting to hike during the summer, you got to be careful. If you're going into the canyons, you're going to and the mountain areas where you're going to see rattlesnakes, then you want to make sure your dogs are also given the rattlesnake vaccine. Now, understand one thing about the rattlesnake vaccine. It is not a lifesaver. It is not meant to combat the effects of the venom. All right? You still need the anti-venom injection, but what it's going to do is buy you time. So another thing I recommend, if you are going into an area where rattlesnakes are known to be a problem and you're going to be hiking with your dogs, make sure that you have identified the closest veterinary hospital or veterinary emergency facility that carries the anti-venom. Down where I am, I don't stock it. It's expensive. It's going to sit on a shelf. I don't think I've ever had to use it. So what's going to happen is it's going to cost me money to sit there, not get used, and then it's going to expire. The expiration date is like maybe a year. But emergency facilities, they usually stock it. So if you're going to take your dogs in an area where snakes are a problem, make sure you pre-identify the closest veterinary facility that is going to have the anti-venom. That's very important. All right. Now, what else? Oh, traveling. Keep your questions coming, guys. And I have always a lot to talk about. Here's one. My pug gets frequent skin infection in his left ear. It clears up with antibiotics, but always comes back in that ear only. Any ideas what could be triggering these infections? So first of all, usually animals, dogs especially, that have persistent ear infections. It could be allergy. It could be, if it's one ear only, it could be a latent infection, okay, of yeast. Yeast infections outweigh bacterial infections in ears. So you want to have that checked. But most importantly, if it's an issue with only one ear, because it doesn't make sense. Dogs that have allergies and have otitis because of an allergic otitis, it's going to be both ears. So now I would be looking in that ear very carefully, looking for any, some sort of congenital or just an acquired narrowing of the ear canal. I'd be looking for polyps. I'd be looking for a foreign body that is stuck somewhere down deep in that ear, like a foxtail. And the only way to identify that is going to be in anesthesia and having the ear scoped, ideally scoped with a device that goes down in the ear, hooked up to a camera, and you can actually visualize the entire canal down to the eardrum and making sure also that the eardrum is intact and healthy looking. So you can also use, what I do sometimes, is you could take an otoscope cone, the skinny one, and they're fairly long, and you go down the ear. As long as you can visualize the entire canal and the eardrum, then you should be able to see what is causing this ear to be a problem. And if that doesn't work, I would see a veterinary dermatologist, and they can maybe do some specialized testing. For example, here in LA, we have veterinary skin and ear. So most of the dermatologists are also well-equipped, because ears are between dermatology and medicine. I would say the dermatologists are very well-equipped as well to really do a thorough otic exam. And that's what I'd recommend. Hi, doctor, want to travel to Europe with my friendly cat. So not an issue, except you need to know the specific requirements of every single country. You can go to a website. It's the USDA Dash or APHIS, APHIS, that's the Animal Plant Health Inspection Service. So USD APHIS, go online and you can go traveling, domestic travel or international travel with a pet, and click on it, which country, click on them. And then it'll, all these drop boxes, and it'll give you the exact requirements for that country. Now, I will tell you, everyone is going to need a rabies vaccine, and usually they're going to need them to be up to date. And some want them every year. Every 3 years is okay in most countries, but you cannot allow it to lapse. If it lapses, you got to go start all over again with two rabies shots, one after another, usually a month apart. And then some countries actually require a rabies titer test. You have to know that depending on where you're traveling, some of these restrictions are very challenging, time-consuming, expensive. So keep that in mind. But preparation is the key, which takes me to another thing I wanted to talk about, but I'm going to answer this question from Macy Toomey. My cat hates when I leave for travel, very anxious the day of. Is this a good time to use it? Yes, you can use any kind of sedation. Cats really, really are smart. So what happens is they know when you're packing to leave. One of my dogs used to jump in the suitcase. Her name is Millie. She was the funniest thing. If she could, she would let me close the suitcase and take her along with us. You know, it's crazy. They sense it. They know it. And so it is not uncommon. So if they're getting uptight already, you haven't even left yet, but they just know what's coming. They make the association. That suitcase means that mom is going to be gone within a day or two. So it's very important. So yes, it will be okay to use something that'll help. All right, let me break here. Don't go away for a quick break here at Pet Life Radio, and we'll come back in just a minute.
Begging to hear more of your favorite show? Full episodes of all our shows are available on demand. Go to PetLifeRadio.com to fetch our entire lineup of Possum Pet Podcasts. Also, dig us up in iHeartRadio and iTunes. Let's talk pets. Live and on demand, only from Pet Life Radio. Let's talk pets.
Let's talk pets.
On Pet Life Radio.
Pet Life Radio.
PetLifeRadio.com.
All right, we're back here at Pet Life Radio 2. We're just talking about when you're traveling, make arrangements, make sure you are aware. Don't get stuck going into a hotel with your 70-pound Labrador when you made reservations. and find out that there's a 35-pound weight limit coming from the hotel. It's happened before. Also, good ideas when you're traveling, just the basics, okay? Oh, yeah, she just came from Downey Shelter. Yes, of course. I mean, of course, he's, you know, pretty scared, and that's to be expected. It's going to take some time to really bond, and they get out of this place. They're in a new home. They're kind of digging on it, and all of a sudden, they see you're leaving, obviously. And also, cats have been in a shelter. Chances are, as an adult cat, started in someone's home at some point. And we don't know how that cat ended up in the shelter, what the problems were at home, but it's not uncommon that now you're doing something that cat is already used to, has already seen. And then, you know, that's what it could be. So just throwing that in there. Now, back to the hotel, back to travel. Preparedness is the key. When you're traveling, make sure the following. Your first of all, that your pet is up to date with all vaccines. Make sure that you have proof of that, including rabies, especially rabies. Make sure your pet is wearing an ID and is microchipped. Essential. All right. Make sure you have a picture of your pet. Okay. Because that's important. In case the pet should be lost, if the pet is on medication, make sure you bring enough. And I would bring an extra week or two just in case things happen to your plans. Okay. Make sure you have the name of a veterinarian nearby to where you're staying, name and phone number, and the local emergency center of where you're staying. If it's with family, make sure you use their vet if they have a pet. And they know you want to get all that information. You don't want to rush for it, looking for it, if something happens and you're ill-prepared. So it's always good to give you that step ahead. And, you know, other than that, leash collar. And when you're traveling by car. Interestingly, we always talk about abrupt changes in food. Now you can go from great food A to great food B, but if you don't do it gradually, the pet will get diarrhea. Well, guess what? Water supplies are also very different. So what I recommend is start your trip with a big, big gallon jug of water from your home. And you know, on your trip, you give them a little water, you stop at your pit stops, you drink a little bit of water. Every time you get to some other location, refill it. So let's say you just use this much, fill it to the top again, and then use this much again, fill the top, shake it each time. So what's happening is you are gradually shifting the water supply into the water supply that they are used to. The majority will still be your water, but you're always adding a little bit at a time. And is a very gradual change to water. So that's a good idea. So back in JP, it's bank holiday here. Also, I'm doing Amazing Garden. So Zena's home. Yep, it's tougher to get them into UK. But actually, it's easier now than it used to be. When it wasn't part of the EU, and now it's not part of the EU again, but when it was, when they made that shift, before that, you had to have rabies titers. And now it's such a pain in the butt to get rabies titers and the rabies shots. You really need to know what you're doing. Dog wakes up with a really noisy tummy, but doesn't want to eat. Not every day, but often more lately. This happens. Also may have loose stools. Tips. Yeah. What I would do to start, is borborygmus. That is gas. It is the stomach getting really active. It usually happens middle of the night, late night, early morning, and it's uncomfortable for them. And they don't know why, but they feel it and they hear it. It freaks them out. So what I would do is the same way I would do when dogs have that vomiting of bile. It's related. And that is, I would give a late night snack. Usually set aside about a quarter to a third of dinner, set it aside, okay? And you give it to them as a late night snack. Before that snack, what I also want you to do is give, depending on the size, a half of a Pepcid or a half of a Prilosec. Wait about 10 or 15 minutes and then give that remaining food from dinner. See if that solves the problem. All right? If not, let me know. Okay, Candy, you have a question. It looks like you started it and didn't finish it, so let me know. All right, guys, I have a 9:30 appointment this morning, so I'm going to wait for Candy to finish the question if you have to. If not, and make sure you know what? I do this every time. Next week, we are going to talk about 4th of July tips, something you can do now to gradually get your pets, especially your dog, if your dogs freak out, gradually get them to not only be okay with the loud sounds of fireworks, but actually associate them with something positive, like a treat. It's a process. It takes a while, but it can. Wow. Came to see about a year ago with my dog, Duffy. He has a lipoma on his side that you looked at. My question would be, it needs to be removed. All right. Well, again, if it's truly a lipoma, unless it's gotten super big, wait it out. If it hasn't changed much at all, there's no rush. Well, usually what I do with lipomas is I wait until we need to anesthetize the pet. usually for dentistry or something that's more significant that is a problem, then while they're under anesthesia, we can remove the lipoma. Lipomas are benign, and unless it's changing or getting really, really big or impeding their motion or something or making them uncomfortable, I'd leave it alone. But I like to remove them as an elective procedure when they're already down under anesthesia. So if it's getting really big or if it's causing a problem for the dog, then yes, we should go ahead and just remove it. And it was holistic into a heartworm because I'm working to my mosquitoes and fleas. It's a tough question. I'm not a holistic vet. I can refer you to some. My dog's clean and takes medicine giving seizures. Yeah, some of the isoxazolines can and or have been related to seizures. So what I would do is you could try some of the older products. You could try Comfortis. You could try Trifexis. And even Revolution doesn't work as well. I don't think that the imidacloprid, which is the Advantage, or the fipronil, which is the frontline, is going to be effective anymore. Really, dogs, most animals, well, not the animals that have become resistant, the fleas and ticks have become resistant. So those aren't going to work really well. But you still, Comfortis, Trifexis still work, and you might want to try those. And I think they are also having oral. The Revolution, which is selumectin, is still topical. Again, it's not as effective in dogs, but it will still work. It's better than nothing if your dogs are reacting to the isoxazolines. And Revecto is a topical. I don't know if you were giving one of the oral ones, which is NexGard. Revecto has both. Credelio or NexGard, Credelio, Simparica, then those are all only oral. Revecto is the only one that comes both. If you're using an oral, you can try the topical. It may not have the same effect. All right? Anyway, but if you want, contact me privately if you want to get a hold of recommendations for holistic vets. All right. Anyway, that's it for all we have time for. I got an appointment I got to rush to. So we will see you next week. And please, the first thing we're going to do is we're going to talk about, if you want to learn this, it's a great trick. You'll have about 2-3 weeks to do it. Maybe, hopefully it'll be enough, how to basically modify your dog's reaction to fireworks. So if they freak out, it's a great alternative. And it can get to the point where they actually not only will deal with them, they'll tolerate them, but they may actually stay tuned next week.
Let's Talk Pets, every week on demand, only on PetLifeRadio.com.